Cameron, back to Hipwood. They're lining up now. McCarthy to finish things off for Brisbane.
Hipwood gets his moment now and blasts at goal square. Danaher! Perfect for Joe. Heads to the top of the square. Big mark, Archie! Exactly what he's been doing since coming back into the lineup this year. McCluggage, who's missed a few this year, nails a big one there.
Now to Berry, steadies from just inside 50. The kick goes long and very strong. McCluggage, can he find a target? Sends it in long. Gutston, right up the middle. Clark's kick, Walters flew. Young, Soren, Brisbane win.
It is Brisbane Lions Fancast with JB and Patrick back for another week after a very, very close encounter against the Freo Dockers over in Optus Oval. Oh, a very heart-wrenching, frustrating game if you ask me. During the broadcast, I was pretty down on the whole thing, I must admit, but upon reflection, happy to get the 4 points. Still failed to get that second position on the ladder, but you know, you can't win them all, I suppose. Even though the opportunity continues to present itself. Patrick, how did you find the game?
I think I was a bit more positive than most, like, watching the game. I thought it was, like, a pretty interesting tactical affair and a really high-pressure game where I think both teams had a lot to play for. I know Fremantle are kind of languishing, but I think they've got quite a lot of pride, particularly in front of their, like, little Optus bubble. Funny watching some of the sponsors zip around there that I have no idea what are, given they're probably some sort of Perth thing. But yeah, it kind of got to a point, I think, at three-quarter time, it was just like, we just have to win this game and we have to find a way to win. They're not going away. And, you know, in fairness and, like, to credit the team, they did end up just getting the job done. And you can't win them all in the ways that you would like by sort of 50 points every week. But I think with the performance of last week, and they needed it, and I think it meant quite a bit to the team, so good win.
Yeah, I think last week's game against the Suns was still really, really weighing on my mind when watching this game. I guess I was a lot of, not again, not this again type operation, but at least the intent was there. That's something you could say. The pressure gauge was pretty consistently high across the four quarters. Just some of the skill execution was well off, and still some players below what we know they're capable of. But as you said, got to get the win. 4 points is 4 points. On to Adelaide next week.
I think I might just have been, like, reveling in the idea of, like, Nick Dacos, Murphy and Petty, who are three of my, like, very, very top echelon of unlikable or disliked players, all nursing injuries. Was I was a bit up and about.
Sure. Okay. Bit of vitriol behind that one. You know, obviously we saw in the middle that Hayden Young went to Lachie Neale and Dunkley was going to Sarong. And it looked for the second week in a row that Lachie wasn't going to be able to sort of cope with that tag. And Hayden Young was really sort of giving him a lesson in work rate and able to not only sort of blanket Neale, but get a lot of the ball himself. And he was probably best on for the first half, Hayden Young. And Dunkley's job on Sarong didn't necessarily seem to be that effective. Dunkley wasn't getting any of the ball, and Sarong was sort of one of the top possession getters on the field as well. So the midfield, you know, since the loss of Will Ashcroft is looking a bit sort of shaky the last couple of weeks after one of our most dominant performances against Geelong. Are we really relying on a 19-year-old kid that much that we're starting to look somewhat inept in there?
I think there's sort of factors in that. You know, if you look at the player that was not mentioned for Fremantle, there's, like, Andrew Brayshaw, and you know, he nearly won a Brownlow medal last year. So they have a really good center three. And I think it's hard because it almost seems like our priorities are sort of just being, like, skewed a little bit. I had a few conversations during the week, and one of them was sort of interesting because it said, you know, teams are going to try and find ways to sort of pick up ideas against you. And, you know, at what point do you sort of, you go down the list of, like, well, he's going to play on him and he's going to play on him, so we're going to do this to stop this and do this to stop this, and, you know, go all the way down, and then by the end of it, you're not really playing your own brand. So it's hard because you sort of, are they kind of hard tagging one another, or is it just a sort of running with? I thought it was more so the idea of Young was kind of going with Neale and just beating him head to head. and maybe sort of just working your own game might work better. But that could have been to do with Jackson having a really, really good first half. So
he did.
I'm not overly too sure. And because sort of Fort looked a little bit less mobile than he sort of normally does. He's normally quite a good around the ground ruck, and he just looked a little bit frail, I think.
Yeah, I noticed Joey, I mean, obviously, especially in that last quarter, but Joey was taking a lot more ruck contests than we're used to seeing as well. So, yeah, I thought Luke Jackson was probably one of the best on the ground by the end of the game. I thought he was pretty influential. I mean, obviously, in the ruck, up forward, he was taking marks down back. He covered the ground really well. He had a fantastic game, Luke Jackson. So, you know, if you're a Freo fan, you wouldn't be too unhappy if you actually let Sean Darcy go and get some quality draft picks in or whatever and have Luke Jackson as your number one man.
Well, I think it's been proven with the Jackson and Darcy and the Grundy and Gorn kind of experiments that sort of two ruckmen interrupts your flow a little bit.
Yeah.
Like two ruckmen, one of them kind of masquerading as a forward or as an on-baller. Like, you know, the second ruck needs to be a designated player that's can also do a bit of ruck. You know, you wouldn't look at Blitzarves and say, you know, when he goes into the ruck, he's not a ruckman that also happens to play as a winger or a backman or is like, you know, one of the most freak utility players in the league. You know, nor like it's so weird. Like there just seems to be a bit of, how can I sort of say it? Like, you know, the idea of Grundy as a forward or Gorn as a forward, like, it just doesn't really work. Just play one ruck and have another guy fill in. And I think their other fella that filled in did a pretty good job. So I think we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves though. So we had some substantial outs. I think we theorized, but didn't pick up on it last week. So coming out, unfortunately for like this like ruck round,
yeah.
Big O was out and Kadeem Coleman was out with this sort of permanent late game salt deficiency.
Well, I mean, to be fair, this one was a little bit of a high pressure falcon to the face. So hopefully he's back next week. Hopefully they're both back next week.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, was it just the lack of salt on the brain or something? I don't know.
Maybe.
Kyle Lohman came out. So we had Bailey, Fort, and Jackson Pryor come in. I kind of hadn't really kept up to tabs with my favorite sort of underling player in Jackson Pryor, not sort of realizing he was playing as a really designated halfback. I mean, to me, I thought he early on in his career operated really well as a wingman. And the idea of trying to go into a halfback when you've got kind of quite a lot of players there that also play that position is an odd career choice, but yeah, there we go. And Dev Rob was the sub. So what did you think of the ins?
I think they were the sort of necessary like-for-like ins to the best of what we had, I guess. I mean, I think Daniel Rich did a minor hamstring last week, so I think he probably would have come in for Coleman if he was fit. What do you think about taking Dev and Jackson Pryor over to a WA trip? Does that give them the chance to sort of meet with people you're hoping they're not having a meeting with? I mean, at the end of the day, they can take a phone call whenever, but it sort of just presents that opportunity.
Well, it could be an opportunity that was afforded to them.
True.
And I mean, similarly, like, you know, it could give them a chance to like play in front of their families or whatever. A similar sort of thing if Rich was named, you know, he could have been playing in, I know he's lived in Brisbane forever.
Yeah.
But, you know, I thought that could have been a good opportunity for him to play kind of his last game for the club at the time, because I don't really know if we're going to see Daniel Rich. But maybe, I mean, it doesn't really, it kind of is neither here nor there, really, with Dev Robman Pryor. It is kind of generally a little bit funny that they're literally now, with Pryor's shift halfback, are playing the essential same roles as Zorko and Rich. So it's interesting. But yeah, the beginning of the game was a little bit dicey. Like, it was a bit of a slow start. They kind of got a few goals and it looked pretty arm wrestly, which, I mean, the game didn't really open up all that much.
No, it was high pressure from both teams. And I thought for big sort of swings of that match, Freo was the better team. The way they moved the ball, our forward entries have just been so sloppy lately. And it just continues to be a problem for us. And you look at the other side where Freo were able to hit targets inside and make the most of their opportunities. That's sort of where they were hanging in and getting ahead. You know, I thought at times they should have been sort of four or five goals ahead.
Yeah, it was a bit interesting. I thought their Fremantle's first three goals were pretty generous in terms of their decisions. They were all free kicks. Yeah. Or one of them was a mark that I don't think was a mark. Like, he literally fumbled the ball. So they were very generous. And when you're dealing with, five goals and a half, yeah, fair play, they hit their shots and things like that. But yeah, it was quite a high pressure first half, and I really don't think we kind of played particularly well. Jared Berry was kind of the fulcrum for the team. Interestingly, like, still playing on the wing, and he kind of dominated his wing. I thought it was the first time in a few weeks he hadn't had someone who was particularly like a inverted commas good winger.
Yeah,
and he was able to kind of stretch his legs a little bit. So, I mean, the first half really just sort of a bit of a wash, really.
I think it was our role players that sort of really got us going. Like, Link McCarthy was, from the first zone, his pressure was immense. Like, he was laying, I think he'd laid four tackles in the space of the first 15 minutes or something silly like that. Archie, again, Berry, as you mentioned, Rayner playing his role. It was the role players that were really keeping us in it and moving us forward, rather than, I guess, the big names you're used to, like your Charlie Camerons, your Joe Danaher's, your Neils and Dunkley's.
Yeah, we got beat up a little bit, seemingly at clearance, for that first half. And there was an odd sort of first of three examples of us working really hard to kick a goal, and then them almost immediately from centre clearance just running the ball and getting like a pretty slimy, easy goal. So that was a pattern that began and then kind of didn't continue quite quickly, which I was really, really thankful of. So yeah, the first half was an interesting one. But yeah, Link McCarthy, I think early on, I think in the chain where he kicked his first goal was almost, he had three or four efforts in the one passage of play, which was really good. Set a good tone. I think I heard Nathan Buckley on comms say, like, oh, I haven't seen his attack on the ball like this before. And it's like, dude, have you not like watched any of the games this year? Like, I quite like Buckley and his analysis, but that seemed like a little bit of a...
It's not often I hear Bucks actually commentating one of our games, so probably not, actually.
True. Well, I feel like you should... I don't know. If I was working in the football meter, I'd watch every game.
Yeah. But
maybe they just can't be bothered, particularly a team that's, literally in the top four and has been in the top four for the majority of the year. It feels like you would watch all of their games.
I just want to quickly... Charlie Cameron, he's had, I guess, probably 2 months, give or take, that have been quiet by his standards. Do you think something's going on there? You think he's carrying an injury or something? Because, I mean, apart from the fact that he just refused to kick a drop punt on the weekend, the last couple of weeks he's just sort of failed to make distance of shots that he normally would. And I'm just wondering if there's something going on there that we're going to find out about later.
Maybe it's a hard one with Charlie, because I felt that his body language has been kind of less than great for quite a stretch now, almost since his front fence got knocked in. It's kind of his colours have slowly been lowered, but I don't know, it's a hard one. I'm just kind of hoping that he becomes a bit more game breaker-y going forward, but yeah, it's definitely frustrating to see him miss snaps and stuff like that, and ones that are really on the cusp of where you should be going for a drop punt, I think. And even he had one in front that he opted to go around the corner, so I don't know, he still contributed, but maybe the a fully fledged, fully fit Charlie should have kicked 5 goals.
Yeah, well, it wasn't his worst game by any stretch. Like, he had 4 or 5 shots on goal, and he did set up that last one to Hipwood, and his pressure was thereabouts. But yeah, it's just, I don't know, there's something there, and hopefully that it can sort of correct itself come finals.
Yeah, I mean, it was 2 goals, 2 with one that didn't make the distance, and then 2 goal assists. And if you're ending the game with, even 4-1 and 2 assists, like, that's a really good game from a small forward. So fine margins, I think, to get him back into where, the elite category for him, I think.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I thought our back six really, aside from our role players, I thought that whole back six really kept us in it as well, because they defended a lot of entries. And Fag said as much after the game that we did not play our best footy. In fact, there were good periods of the match where we didn't play good footy at all. And our back six really held up throughout the game. I mean, Jack Payne had a good game. Harris, not his best, but certainly better than last week. And with those changes of Jackson Pryor coming in, I thought Stas, he had his moments, both good and bad. And Jackson Pryor did bits and pieces, but I thought the back six in general were quite good.
Yeah, Jackson Pryor there was sort of only in my mind. I mean, his disposal efficiency wasn't great, which kind of makes you wonder, because it wasn't overly noticeable at the time. There was one where he lost his man off centre bounce and they nearly got another one straight back, and he looks really disappointed with himself. just that degree of separation. And I thought Leicester was really good in certain like one-on-one, yeah, even two-on-one against him moments. He just continues to sort of impress. You know, the lack of Coleman moving the ball forward, I think just harping back to the first half, Zorko kind of took that on and was like some quite aggressive kicks going into the corridor sort of early on in the game to try and progress, which we didn't really make the most of. But, you know, at least that progression was there. I've been critical of Zorko, and I thought that was a much better game from him, where he sort of, he did a lot of what you say he does, which I haven't seen him do, which is make decisions quickly and dispose of the ball cleanly and you know, take off the difficult kicks that maybe people might not otherwise want to take the responsibility.
If you've got a mate that loves the Lions, tell them to get the podcast into their ear holes.
Neil and Dunkley were interesting because, you know, they didn't get a lot of the ball, but they got a lot of hands to the ball, particularly sort of for the majority, you know, better part of the game. A lot of double touches, a lot of fumbles, a lot of sort of turnovers straight to the opposition and sort of weird stuff like that. So, I mean, they grew into the game, and maybe it's just a case of what we spoke on earlier of them going to their respective players, kind of, you know, the case of them learning through the game to kind of grow. But I thought sort of Dunkley did a lot of like sort of weird Bulldogs style handballs, which is sort of like, you know, less of that, just handball it to the guy in front of you. Don't go over your head or around the corner sort of thing. But yeah, not, I don't know. I didn't think it was a great game by either Neil or Dunkley. So it does make you wonder, like Brayshaw, he didn't seem to be overly impactful. So was last year more so a flash in the pan? I don't know.
He was injured for the first half of the year. So he's still sort of, I don't think he had a proper preseason. So he's had better games in the back half. But yeah, he's nowhere near what he was last year. That's for sure. Just reflecting on Fremantle, it's, they must be frustrating to support because you know what they're capable of. They've beaten Geelong twice and down there. They've beaten Melbourne at the MCG, but then, you know, they're less than half-half at home as well against random teams. So it's a strange one, isn't it, for Freo? So you never know.
They've
what
got
you're
a lot of talent, I feel. Like Sam Sturt, you know, had probably a career-best game, and it seems like he can't really get on the field as much, you know, over his three seasons. But he's someone that I kind of knew in terms of, like, you know, playing on their team. So I don't know. He seems like apparently he never plays, but he seems quite handy. And Jai Amos is really good. Frederick is a bit of X factor. So,
yeah,
you know, they've got a lot of upside. And I just think with a better kind of game identity, and I know they're trying to bring in that like kind of quick handball running style. But yeah, I think Fremantle should be a lot better than they are, all things considered.
Justin Longmuir, he could be the most boring individual in the world. He's just completely devoid of any sort of personality.
Yes, that is correct. The only thing that I think this goes back to literally the first game we played against them this year, where they were under quite heavy scrutiny. And there's just, I can't get out of my mind the newspaper article of him and Pierce, where they both look like they're like at a beach.
Yeah.
But also like a beach crossed with like a farmer's market where they themselves are the farmers. Hilarious. So I can't unsee that. But he just is like hands in his face the whole game. I don't know about Longmuir. Like he's sort of just like an average looking grey haired dude.
Deceptively tall, I suppose.
Yeah, actually that is the thing, because he was like kind of tall compared to like even next to Pierce, and Pierce is humongous. So
yeah.
I don't know. Going into three-quarter time, what was your thoughts on the state of the game?
Oh, I think I was really, at that point, really quite frustrated with the game. I again went the live tweet at the request of Brad.
Oh, God. Yeah, Brad.
I did say to him, yeah, I'll do it, but you know, if we get smoked again, it's on you. So he knew what was happening. Okay, well, here was my, just to give you an insight of where I was at three-quarter time. It said, lucky we're not down 4 or 5 goals. This team simply does not have what it takes. So there you go.
Far out, man.
Yep.
That's not exactly a swell indictment of this group. Yeah, I mean, I was frustrated in that third quarter just with the two, you know, two of the three goals that became like quick turnarounds from center bounce. I was just like, man, can we just like not get a goal immediately scored against us when we work so feckin' hard to like kick a goal? We only kicked 8, and 3 of them they've immediately replied. So frustrating. Yeah, scores are level at 3-quarter time. I just was like, man, we got to win this game. We got to find a way to just dig in and win the game. And if they can do that, then that's fine. Like, that's good. puts us in a good position. We sort of knew what we would be playing for.
I think I put too much emphasis on the needing to make up the percentage points or percentage point. Like, we needed to make up 0.1% to finish in second. So I put a lot of emphasis on that. And as I said, last week's horrific display against the Sun was still weighing on my mind. And I'm just thinking to myself throughout this game, it's round 21 and we are still, like, we still don't have the right balance here. And we've got finals around the corner. Like, everything's just flashing back all these straight set exits and getting belted in prelims. And I'm going full crisis mode watching this game. And in reality, I should have just been going, all right, let's get the 4 points here and get the job done.
Yeah, because I think, you know, the thing that's weird with percentage is, like, in order to make up the percentage on Melbourne, we needed to win the game by 124% of just, you know, Fremantle's score. So it was sort of like, I at no point thought we were going to blow that out to win by, you know,
yeah,
20 points. I just didn't think that was realistic at the time. So maybe in a low scoring game, we could have got out to maybe two goals or something like that. But I thought when they were not going away, just earmark that. I thought we were going to have a difficult time getting up to the second, which I thought was like a bit of a, like, what are you doing, Pavlic, telling Lockie Neal that we're up to second at the end of the game and things like that. Sort of, yeah, just like, man, know your stuff. So during the week, I watched the Redeem team.
Oh, did you really?
Oh, I watched it.
That's commitment to the cause.
Yeah, I was so morbidly curious. It was, you know, it itself was a fine story.
Yeah.
But there's not a great deal that I would kind of relay in a translatory sense to the Lions. The only thing I took out on that we apparently seem to be doing is, as LeBron James said, they won't effing go away. We seem to just have learned to make sure teams never go away when we play them.
I guess, and this is going to be boring for people that haven't watched the Redeem team, the parallels I drew were the fact that the USA sort of bowed out of two fairly heavy competitions in the Olympics and the World Cup, that they were heavy favourites to win. And not that we've ever been heavy favourites to win bloody premierships over the last couple of years. But they sort of realised what it was they needed to do to take that final step, and it was to play as a team and all that sort of stuff. Like, they had all the talent on the list in the world, like the best basketball players in the world, and they still couldn't get the job done against a well-organised team in Spain or Argentina or Greece, or the teams that sort of beat them in those competitions. So they sort of realised they needed to work together as a team and do that team defense thing and all that sort of stuff. And I guess that's the parallels that have been drawn to the Lions.
Good shout. I mean, yeah, that's there. It's just funny. I was sort of like, you know, what do we as a team need sort of redemption from? I guess it's sort of, I guess it is those sort of straight set losses. But I think in the last 5 years, I don't think we've been the best team in the competition. And that's why we haven't made a grand final. I mean, you look at the teams that have beaten us over the past few years. They've all been teams that have made the grand final. We've never lost in finals to a team that hasn't been in the grand final. So anyway, that was just a little bit of aside that triggered my mind from that Fremantle not going away. Just harnessing little LeBron James. Last quarter was a bit of a slog and very goal for goal, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. And when Freddie put that goal through with a minute left, I thought, oh no, not again. We're going to get milkshimmed. Thankfully, we've learned and managed to grind out the win. And Joe had the chance to really put it away with a fleeting shot from 50 in the dying moments. But wasn't to be. But yeah, heart and mouth stuff at the end. But just lucky to get away with it.
Is it odd that I was kind of quite calm?
It is quite odd, yeah.
Yeah, I was quite calm. Like, whether I was like sort of just resigned to the fate of the game. But I sort of thought that they probably had learned, and they sort of knew not to kind of screw this one up. So I was relatively calm. Danaher laid two pretty massive tackles in the last sort of stretch of time, which was, you know, I thought him and Hipwood really stood up in the last quarter. You know, Hipwood kicking a pretty clutch goal. Hipwood ended on his, like, two goal assists just to kind of put him in that, like, E forward with the most goal assists in the competition sort of space. I thought Fort in the last quarter played pretty well until he kind of went out with the injury. And then Danaher sort of took the lead on that. And Gunson chimed in with a goal, you know, late, pretty crucial. How do you feel when you sort of just see, like, Hugh McCluggage sort of just outside 50 about to deliver the ball in?
It feels
generally
good.
A good feeling.
Yeah,
feeling. Yeah.
It's the only person I can sort of think over the years that I would rather deliver a ball inside 50 is Simon Black. So you know when Huey's got the ball, that it's more often than not going to hit someone lace out.
He's grown into the season pretty well, Huey.
He certainly has. He certainly has. Just like a lot of those players you mentioned before grew into the game as it went on as well. Danaher just wants to grab the ball out of the ruck every time, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, I think it's probably just a bit of lack of ruck craft. So, you know, do you reckon going into this season that he would have thought to... Like, I'm sure they would have practiced. But I remember at the beginning of the year, like, you know how the ruckmen tend to have, like, massive shin guard on?
Yeah.
Hipwood was gearing up with that early on in the season.
Oh, jeez.
So it was kind of like pretty weird one. You're like, oh, let's bring an ACL guy back and put him in the ruck. So I don't know whether Danaher would have done a great deal of ruck craft over the off season. So maybe that's something that in the change of seasons might happen. He might do a bit more work on that and hopefully a bit more work on search or goal kicking.
Yeah, I feel like that's never going to be not corrected. I think it's just that's always going to be what it's going to be with Joe.
It could also, maybe he's just thinking like way ahead. He's like, oh, we're getting towed a little bit in the midfield here. I'll just take it out and hack it forward and clear the contest.
Hey, if it works, it works. Not going to argue there.
Yeah. So in the end, you know, what was it? 3-point win? Beautiful.
Yep. That's all she wrote.
3-point win. It meant a lot to the team. Just checking out the song post-game. I haven't seen them sing the song with that much kind of feeling for quite a while, so that was good because that had been a little bit on my hit list, the singing of the song, and the lack of vigour, let's say.
Get in touch anytime. Shoot us an email at blfancast@gmail.com or join the Discord.
Got any votes?
Yes, I do. Okay, so for me, Link 3, Berry 2, Luke Jackson 1.
Yeah, fair enough. That's good. We all know that I don't throw away votes. So I've gone Berry 3, stick that up here to whom it may concern, and McCluggage 2 and Link 1.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, Berry's, and like I said last week, you know, he only had a couple, only one or two more quiet performances before I was sort of really starting to question him. So it was good that he had a really good day.
Beautiful.
Changes for the game against the Crows. I'm not sure if they will still be without Isaac Rankin. I know he was progressing pretty well with that hamstring that initially looked pretty bad, so not sure if he'll be back in the fold. He had a pretty good game against us last time we played down at Adelaide Oval. But any other changes that you're making?
Aside from Owie and Coleman coming back in for Fort and Pryor.
Yep.
It's sort of a matter of trying to squeeze Dev Robin, the team, because I think that he's got upside.
Yeah.
I don't think he was used. You're looking like 5 minutes to go, and he looks like he's just sort of like reclining at the back of the bench with a 4X in his hand. So
it's strange, like this, and we speak about this most weeks, that our use of the tactical sub doesn't seem to have any sort of tactics behind it. It's like Fagan forgets we've got one, and it's like, or he's holding on, just like holding on in case there's an injury to use it. And then it gets to, you know, 8, 7, 6 minutes left on the clock. This time 5, and he goes, oh yeah, I'll chuck him on. And he had an immediate impact.
And the irony is as soon as he went on, Fort came off with a hamstring.
Yep.
After Fletcher had been subbed out. You know, Fletcher was pretty quiet, but like, it's so odd. You're not like preventing the sort of situation happening.
But I'm with you. I want Dev Rob in that team. I think, you know, as I mentioned sort of at the top of the show, our midfield is just looking a little bit scratchy. And it did at the start of the year. You know, Dunks and Ashy and Neil were all sort of talking about learning to work together, and they finally sort of did, and it was clicking, and now Ashy's gone. Maybe that's sort of happening again. They've got to work with a new midfield mix. You know, Rayner's taking more centre bounces. Archie was in centre bounces over the last couple of weeks. But I think Dev Rob offers that defensive pressure, and I want him in the team. So I'm bringing Dev Rob in, and I'm dropping Gunston. You know, I know he had a handy game on the
week. Tale as old as time.
Yeah, I know. I know. I could say this every week. I know he had a handy game, Gunners, and kicked 2 goals. But I just think it allows Cam Rayner to play that role that we know he thrives in. And it gives our forward line a little bit of a different look. Because our entries inside 50 the last couple of weeks have just been so, so lackluster. And it seems to pop out more than we used to. So I want an extra midfielder, lose an extra tall, and have Cam Rayner to sort of float between the two. And then have someone like a Kai Lohman as the sub.
Like, Adelaide are playing a pretty inexperienced defense. Yeah, a little bit on notice for that. The Rankin thing's interesting. Like, you wouldn't really want to wait too much on him if you're Adelaide, are you? Because they really need to win these last three games.
Yeah, they're a great team when they got it going, but they find themselves so far down the ladder, which is a genuine surprise. They're the highest scoring team in the AFL. They've overtaken us now as the number one offense. Texas having a vintage season, which, you know, he's had his moments over the years of controversy, but it's, I don't know, there's something quite nice about seeing him doing well. I don't know why, because generally I haven't liked him over the years.
I think just the funny thing of him is just the idea of him being like the only supporter of that camp.
Yeah.
And it shows you the kind of individual, as well as other things, which I'm not going to, but that in itself is pretty funny.
I did say the last time we played Adelaide on this very podcast, and I think you mentioned that your partner said something similar. It's like, if we play that game again, we win. Or if we play that anywhere else, we win. Because that was the infamous 1-9 in the third quarter when we dominated basically every stat but couldn't get it on the board. And Adelaide ran away with the win in the end.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be a much more open game. Yeah, we'll see. Like, it should be good. It should be an attractive game. But at the same time, there's a lot of, as you said, with the midfield kind of changing, it just seems a little bit like there's... It's like we're going through, as you said, early season teething. So, who knows? I think the blueprint is kind of there from last year of, like, Dev Robb coming in and being able to kind of fill that kind of midfield role. But, yeah, it's an odd one with Adelaide. An odd one.
Certainly is.
Interesting having a lot of these games where there are a lot of teams with a lot to play for. So anyone that's got a cheeky little one against the bottom two teams is kind of like, they're probably pretty happy.
Yeah, well, I mean, thankfully we've got two home games to round it out. And who knows what position the Saints will be in come round 24, if they're fighting for the eight or if they've really cemented themselves. So, but you can imagine some home games that we haven't lost so far this year, and I would hope and expect that trend to continue. And then, of course, the big blockbuster against Collingwood in round 23 at Marvel, which is looking a little bit different than it was, say, 5 weeks ago. Collingwood have lost a couple on the bounce now. They've lost their golden boy, Nick Dacos. Murphy's out for, it looks like, a couple of weeks. So it's going to be an interesting game.
Yeah, it's been weird watching them over the last couple of weeks, because I know this will sound like bleedingly obvious, but prior to, like, they're like, main strategy was just they got really, really good deep forward 50 entries, and they would get like 15 of them a game and 10 would result in goals, and then they'd win, and then like Elliott would kick like 3 goals from the boundary line. And I think that's interesting because it's not really the area of the ground that we've been hitting. And the idea of getting like just hitting the ball in good areas to one-on-one or two-on-twos, right in that goal mouth, sort of 30 meters out. It was interesting when we played Geelong that they didn't have any shots from in that range.
Yeah.
Because we just deny them that space. And that they haven't been able to do that over the last couple of weeks. Was just like hit that spot where they can kind of isolate Mixday or Majacek, who are like two pretty scrappy players, bring the ball to ground, have people float in and that sort of thing. So it's been interesting, but yeah, I think it's an odd point in the competition where the top four teams are all looking a little bit exposed. Melbourne have been good, but you know, Petty went down, so it couldn't happen to a nicer bloke. But there's some momentum kind of coming from just below in the form of Michael Voss, who I gotta say, looking at his press conference, he looks like Michael Voss again.
Yeah,
you know, we spoke about it on the bye issue of him, just he looked kind of hunched over and he was sort of talking through his teeth. But he looks much more relaxed and much more like the kind of Michael Voss that we probably all know.
It's amazing what winning games of footy will do.
Yeah. Well, what did they say? They won 7 in a row, which they haven't won 7 in a row since 2000. So
that and the Giants. The Giants are making some big strides as well and playing really good footy. So yeah, those are...
I'd said the Giants got stifled by Sydney. So at least there is a weird element with this ladder and so many teams having so much to play for. They are kind of all cannibalizing one another. So it's really all to play for anyone. I still think it's weird, like watching First Crack yesterday, which I haven't done in a while, there was a lot of like hype for the 5-8s. Like, oh, can teams win it from 5-8? And they're sort of like, I think David King came out with this one and said, like, it doesn't really matter who you're playing, it's how or where you finish, it's how you're playing. And it's like, dude, you've spent like the last 20 rounds saying like you can't win it from outside the top four. And now you're just deciding to like flip.
Yeah.
It's like, we statistically, one team in 25 years under the new format has won it from outside the eight. And that was in a pretty weird year where you had like the wilting Giants. So I still don't think that you can really win from outside the top four. So, I mean, I don't think that you can win. No, I really don't think, yeah. I really don't think you can win from 5-8.
There are some teams there, though, that, as you said, playing good footy at the moment. And if Geelong sort of find their way in, you never know what they're going to be capable of as well. So, can they win it? Maybe. But there's certainly not teams to just, like, take lightly either.
No, definitely not. But I guess you just have to kind of try and keep winning what's ahead of you. I mean, percentage be damned, like, will it be the case of if we finish level with, you know, one of Melbourne or Port and finish fourth or finish third or whatever, like, are there going to be regrets on the opportunities? Like, absolutely there are. But, you know, we're looking at this now going like, you know, had we turned up against Gold Coast and had we won against Melbourne, we'd be sitting top.
True.
But we didn't. So there's going to be regrets. You know, I think the recent memory of that game against West Coast and the 0.1 percentage over the Bulldogs thing was like a once in a lifetime sort of weird oddity.
Yeah.
And that's kind of made a lot of us kind of hyper focus on percentage, I think.
I think that and the focus that's been on the Lions and the track record at home versus away and how it would really be handy to have a home qualifying final. I think those two things are what a lot of people are focusing on, and whether it's, you know, conscious or subconscious, I know it's sort of seeped into my brain a little bit that I guess I'm sitting here going, God, we need that home qualifying final if we're in any shot here.
I do agree with that. Yeah, I would love a home qualifying final, but at the same time, we won a pretty massive final against the reigning premiers last year at the MCG. So really anything can happen.
You're right.
Not saying that we will, but, you know, don't diminish my favourite game of the past. Oh, man, it's so bloody good.
No, you're absolutely right.
Make sure you follow us on socials. Just search for BL Fancast.
All right, so our changes are in. A couple of things happening around the world of the AFL. Oh, just quickly as well, the twos had a bye, so nothing to report there.
That's really helpful for the runtime.
It really is. A couple of things going on in the world of the AFL. Obviously, Port Adelaide. A massive fine for those guys, $100,000 for breach of concussion protocols. You know, just watching that head knock between Lockie Jones and Alir Alir, as I'm sure everyone is feeling the same, amazed that Alir Alir was allowed back on the field.
Well, they both were. Jones went back on the field first.
It's just crazy. And, you know, accordingly, there's been stories and evidence of Port Adelaide doing, you know, similar before. And I don't know if you saw Sam Mays, his partner sort of came out with some anecdotal evidence of things that were not quite up to scratch as well with the way some of his concussions were handled.
Yeah, but it was ridiculous. Like, I heard the collision on radio. I think I was probably like driving to get like food or something. I don't know. And they were like astounded. They thought it was like, and I like sometimes when you're listening on radio, because it's so bloody intense and so great, sometimes the reality of it doesn't really live up to the hype, but this did. I was like, man, that's amazing. And yeah, Jones runs back on the field, Alir comes back on, and you're like, these guys are in a lot of trouble and they're not reading the room at all.
No, sir, they are not. And I was amazed when Todd Marshall, who's got a pretty significant history with concussions as well, sort of copped a head knock. It was fairly innocuous as he knocked it on the ground in a marking contest and was looking a bit sort of groggy. And I thought, oh, for sure, Port Adelaide's just going to take him off and not run the risk again. Obviously, he went through all the protocols and passed and was able to go back out. But even if, you know, if you're Port Adelaide, even if he does pass those, you're just keeping him off just for PR sake. I guess it was another game of footy they needed to win. But geez, yeah. They're in a world of hurt at the moment.
It's interesting because I'm looking back at my notes trying to find, there was a time early on the season where Zorko kind of had a weird head knock thing.
Ah, that's right, yeah.
And I was critical of that, saying that, you know, if someone gets a head knock, they should just take the test. And I kind of feel like if the AFL are going to be serious about this, and they've shown that they want to be serious with like a 100K fine is massive. Like that all players should possibly take a concussion test on Monday morning.
Well, I don't think it's going to be long before there's an independent doctor down on the bench, either split between both teams or one per team that is employed by the AFL and not by the clubs, just like the NRL do. I have a feeling that's going to be introduced next season, especially like these you know class action lawsuits coming against the AFL. They're going to do absolutely everything they can to minimize the damage that way anyway. So it just
they can't make mistakes like this. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, 100%. The other big news in the AFL this week, obviously, Nick Dacos out for 6 weeks with a hairline fracture in his knee. So that will see him miss the rest of the home and away in a couple of weeks of finals. It's going to be...
I was a bit critical because I sort of thought he was just having a he got blanketed pretty bad and he was just having a sook, him and Tom Mitchell on the bench. Shades of that Olympic gymnast in The Simpsons. Perfect dismount.
Yeah.
Turns out it was a broken leg. I didn't feel bad about that, so.
No, but then, you know, all of a sudden the top two teams, Collingwood and, well, not Port anymore, but they've lost a couple in a row. There's some holes peeking through, and I mean, Hawthorn played a fantastic game on the weekend, got to be said.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit disappointing that he got injured because it kind of diminishes the job that was done on him. Like, five disposals. Five. And, like, he still played 60% of the game, at least. And what he went off like midway through the last quarter. It's like the dude got absolutely owned by whatever his name is.
Finn McGuinness, yeah.
Finn McGuinness, like, great. And like, also, did I not say in round two, put some proper body on it?
100%.
And that's the first time I've seen him get properly hit, and it was dirty, and I loved it. Bit of a knee clash there. But yeah, Hawthorn, I guess Sam Mitchell was kind of correct in the post game, just saying like, you know, they're pretty good, but they're just not consistent. And like, you know, guys like Newcomb and I mean, I've been pretty championing of Will Day. I really like Weddle. I think Weddle's a good player. Since I saw him in the Rising Star, he just seems like a really nice fella. Yeah, Hawthorn are kind of playing for the future.
They are.
In terms of their game style and stuff, it's a different thing, and it's weird how it's stood up against two of the very best teams.
Yeah, and I mean, Sam Mitchell was pretty transparent about that when he took the job, like what he was going to do, and he's done it very well. I think they're going to be, you know, maybe not next year. I mean, we could see them do a rise similar to us a couple of years ago, but maybe not next year, year after. I wouldn't be surprised if they were playing finals footy.
Yeah, I think they could, but I think you're looking at them properly being dangerous in probably the four-year mark, just because I think the game style that they seem to be working on is not one, like, they're not looking for it to be like a good game style, sustainable game style in the like immediate future. It's more of a later thing. He's just, I think Sam Mitchell's sort of seeing things in a different light, and definitely in a way that, like, I don't really know what I'm looking at, but they're doing pretty interesting stuff the way they move the ball. So
it's interesting though, the teams that have beaten Collingwood recently are employed very similar tactics to the way we got beaten by the Suns last week, and that is, if you can take Darcy Moore out of the equation, and if you can blanket Nick Daicos, you're going a long way to winning that game of footy. Just like the Suns did to us, they absolutely shut down Lachie Neale, and the job that Ben King did on Harris Andrews meant that they, you know, you spoke earlier in the, it's like, you know, if this person does this job, this person does this job, this person does this job, blah, 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 and you go down the list. I think those two key jobs, and then you can sort of filter around it. Like, obviously, Charlie Cameron's name goes on the board, and people have got a hold of him as well. But, you know, if you can take Harris Andrews or Darcy Moore out of the equation, if you can get rid of one of the best midfielders, you're going a long way to beating either of us. I think there's some similarities there.
I think the main issue with the Gold Coast game was just that we didn't bring the fight, more so than anything.
It was the best game I've seen the Suns play in 10 years, like the best four-quarter performance. Like, I was really...
We just didn't show up physically.
Yeah.
Like, we weren't there for the heat, and that was me a bigger indictment than, yeah, the tactical stuff of blanketing Neil and doing a job on Harris. Like, we saw Melksham do the same thing, or try to do a similar thing on Harris, and even then we should have won that game. And Ollie Henry tried to do it. You know, so people are trying to do it on Harris. The Neil one's interesting because I had a conversation with my oldest brother just about the captaincy and stuff like that, and, like, he was pretty sympathetic to the idea that, like, Neil, like, being tagged week in, week out, even if it's not a super hard tag, is like, and figuring out how to break that tag is like probably the hardest thing to do in football, which doesn't really lend itself to leading the team because you're so focused on how to impact, like, you know, get to your contest and things like that. He spoke, because his partner's a Carlton fan, he spoke a little bit about Voss talking about how to sort of Voss having to teach Cripps and Doherty to be captains, and how sort of the most natural leader is Wiedering in that team rather than the two actual co-captains. So there could be a shift where maybe it is the sort of thing that's not necessarily for Neil.
Yeah. The other thing that sort of happened throughout the week and caused a bit of a furor, and we sort of touched on it in the podcast last week, but it obviously escalated as the week went on, was the whole Turk Miller-Dane Zorko situation. Obviously, after the game, nothing happened. No reports, even though on the field, Zorko said, you need to report him. He's grabbed my nuts. And then went on radio on Monday morning. And then by Thursday, the AFL had obviously interviewed Dane Zorko and Turk Miller, and he's got a one-week ban. So I think say what you want about either of those guys, and people have and will, but I think the fault there lies with the AFL for just completely mishandling that situation.
Yeah, I think with Zorko, there is an element of like boy who cried wolfism with him, but I get the action's there, and it's like, you know, you don't want people mishandling the crotchal region.
No.
Otherwise, you'll get into a certain NRL situation with certain Johns.
Yep.
John H. That's too obvious. Jay Hapawati. You don't want anything like that. And like the idea that it's not even cited as like some sort of weird thing is odd. Like, you know, I remember seeing, I think in Luke Hodges last year, where like Grant Birchall grabbed him by the balls in like a joking way. And I was sort of like, you can't do that. Like, I know they're mates or whatever, but like, if they're so focused on the image of the game.
Yeah. Well,
like get that away from it.
Was it? No, I'm going to butcher this, but I think something similar happened in Richmond with Marby or Chol.
Oh, yeah, that was in the dressing room.
Yeah. In maybe even the song circle or something, and it really, like that sort of went further than most people thought, I suppose. You know, there's obviously different elements involved in that whole sort of thing. But yeah, not a good look for Tuke, who, you know, he had a fantastic game. He was best on ground, obviously. And now he's got a little blemish next to his name on that. And, you know, a lot of people are saying if it was reversed, if Dane Zorko was the one with the squirrel grip, just imagine the feces being thrown from all corners of the world.
Yeah, well, I think that's the nature of him as a player over the years. I don't necessarily think the captaincy kind of agreed with him and his temperament, so.
Which is strange. He kept getting voted in year after year.
We just didn't have anybody else.
Yeah.
That was the reality of the situation. So move on. Don't grab people by the balls. I find the idea of like, oh, why didn't he go to and have a doctor report? It's like, what, the magnifying glass in the nude, like looking at the bruising.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Just to rub salt in the wound, Sandy Roberts, the whole night, called me Big Jeff Brown. Jeff, did he? Oh, no.
All right, I'll tell you what we can do, and that is talk about a nostalgic player and a bit of a sad one, I guess, this week.
Oh, jeez. So we've got me doing them on a loss hatefully, and then you doing them on like a win sadfully.
Yeah, I mean, sad, but also happy, I guess. It's Justin Clark.
Yeah, fair enough.
Justin Clark's our nostalgic player of the week, and I was only on the list for three years, played 56 games, could have been. You know, imagine that our defensive lineup with Justin Clark, Harris Andrews, and Jack Payne right now.
Yeah, I mean, how old is he?
Born in 93, so he'd be sort of 29, 30. Yeah, and I mean, obviously the way he went out and the stories that sort of came out about his, you know, he was driving a uni and didn't know where he was going and all that sort of stuff, or how he got there. That sort of stuff was really scary, and obviously his professional sport career was cut short. Thankfully, he was super intelligent and fell back onto like aeronautical engineering or something ridiculous like that.
He's a road. I remember him. He was a Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah.
So that tells you kind of all you need to know. Yeah, he was kind of, he sort of existed a little bit in the me caring a bit less about the Lions at that point in time, because it was pretty hard watching at that point. So I missed a lot of him, but he definitely, his like legacy extended far further. He does get kind of mentioned quite often. Yeah, so he's completing a Doctor of Philosophy at Oxford University in Engineering Science.
Well, there you go.
So
not a bad little career path to fall back on. But yeah, obviously super tragic the way his career was cut short. And was, you know, it took him a bit to get going. He sort of looked a bit sort of gangly and he's like, oh, what's this guy going to be in the first little bit? But by the time that he really hit his straps, he was turning into one of the best key defenders that not only we'd seen, but, you know, competition-wide at the time.
Yeah, very highly touted, and I think someone that, you know, had they been able to continue. But, I mean, this is, it's all relative and all relevant in terms of the concussion stuff and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It shows that some people, football is not their main priority.
Yeah, you're right. And I think it was during a time where we sort of, we'd lost Matt Maguire with something similar. Brownie was around that time as well with his repeated bloody busted in head. And Jack Frost soon after as well. We just lost a number of sort of key defenders with concussion, but none more sort of promising than Justin Clark.
Jack Frost, he was never one after Fagan's own heart, I can tell you that. I think he got a mention a few weeks ago at him and Tom Bell going at blows in a practice intra-club game.
Tom Bell.
On the bench, and everyone's sort of just like walking around them, almost as if it was just like spitting on the chaff, fighting on the ground. So, definitely a what could have been with Justin Clark, but also what he's doing now is probably like, I don't know, we end up working for like Elon or something.
Whatever he's doing, he's obviously contributing to the world on a much larger and better scale than, I guess, playing footy. So, but I thought I'd bring him to the show this week because, you know, a lot of fond memories of Justin Clark, albeit for a very short while.
Yeah, very good.
Kicked a goal too.
Sad. Kicked one goal.
All right, well, that's our nostalgic player. No questions this week. You know, late Sunday game, early Monday record. And I got to talk to a lot of people via Twitter or X or whatever it's called now during the game yesterday. Have you got anything else you want to touch on before we head back home for a game against the Crows?
Not a great deal. More so just like, I think it's an element of like grinding out the wins and then trying to bring the heat in finals.
I'd just really like to get our balance sorted before we head into finals because I feel like we're a little bit unbalanced at the moment.
It is the case, but it is sort of the age-old struggle, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul. So I don't know, but I don't think there's too many teams looking overly balanced looking at the ladder. There's often some that have to give up something for something else, which is literally what I just said, and I am losing the plot.
That's a good enough reason as any to wrap it up then, I suppose.
Yeah, hopefully we can just keep this Gabba run going and there we go.
But I do want to leave you on one thing. You little beauty!